You're very welcome to the show tonight. I hope I find you well on this Wednesday evening. I'm delighted to say that my guest this week on Stand Out with me, Ian O'Connell, is ex-Irish female rugby captain and proud Kerry woman, Ciara Griffin. Ireland head coach Adam Griggs named her Irish captain in January of 2018 when she was just 24 years old, a role that she held until her retirement in November 2021. Sit back and enjoy the show. Thanks a million for joining me today, Ciara.
No problem. Happy to join in.
Very good. For all my guests, I like to kind of bring them back to the start, back to the very early days and stuff. What were you like growing up? What was the young Ciara like growing up with friends and stuff?
That's a very good question. I could get in trouble here. I suppose young Ciara was one, I suppose they're like a tear away at times. Loved being busy, loved being outside, wouldn't sit still for more than a minute, and loved going out farming with dad or playing out the backyard with my sisters, or pedaling the go-kart or going on the bike, anything to be active really. Or I used to love my summers. I'd go over to Brayhead to Nana and Grandad's, and I'd be Grandad's shadow all summer, wherever he went I went, which was great. So yeah, that was really the young Ciara. Wouldn't really stop, to be honest, or would try to stay out of trouble as best you could anyway, or try to get out of it.
Stay out of mischief. Are you still, do you still do a bit of farming now, or are you?
Yeah, I do. I love it, to be honest. I'm actually gone back. I'm doing the distance green start at the moment. Oh. So I was actually doing an assignment there before we started chatting. So it's good, and it's keeping me busy. But I love farming, to be honest. I always have, and I just love being outside, love being active, and I have a real interest in animals as well. And like, I help dad now. Dad's still busy and all that, so I give him a hand whenever I can. It was hard during the rugby, you weren't around as often as you wanted to be. Whereas now you're around more often, which is brilliant. So like, you have more time with family and friends, and I've more time to give a hand as well.
Absolutely, and it's great. Even my own cousin, he's a farmer, and I used to go up to his house and out in the tractor in the fresh air. It would really kind of clear the mind, wouldn't it?
Oh, it's brilliant. I always found, like, let's say after a game, if I didn't go our way, or if I wasn't happy with my performance, I went down the field or just went for a walk down the farm roadway, it used to clear your head, and you'd feel so much better out of it. Because the thing with farming, you have to focus on the task you're doing.
Yeah.
You can't let anything else get inside your head. So it's a great way for that as well, and clearing the mind.
There's no flicking through Instagram when you're trying to herd up the cattle or anything.
Definitely not. If you have the phones covered in muck in the space of 30 seconds, so it's like they know.
When you were growing up then, as you kind of got older, what sports is obviously a huge part of your life. You were probably always interested in rugby and football and stuff growing up, but was there any other sports that you dipped your feet into, or any other hobbies that you used to love?
Yeah, obviously, look, I used to play football. It was one of my first team sports I played. I started with Ballymac under 10s playing football, and then I went to Desmond's after that. But other sports I played was, I actually played handball. I played handball for Ballymac, and I've got a few All-Irelands in that, and I loved that. It was really, really competitive, and kind of got into it nearly by accident in some ways. Mom said they were the handball club were looking for members, and do we want to try it? And for play, mom brought us over, and I was only a stone's throw over, a walk over the road, but she brought us over, got us involved, we got the goggles and all that crap, played handball for a number of years, and I loved it. And then I played a bit of soccer as well with Ballyhar Dinos. So I dabbled in a few different sports, kept myself busy, and kept poor mom on the road a lot, and dad obviously with the different trainings. But look, we were really lucky growing up in that, mom and dad, they encouraged us to play sport, but never put pressure on us, if that makes sense.
And
I do think that stood to us, and stood to me definitely an awful lot, in that I never felt pressure to play sport. It was never about results. It was just about me playing and enjoying it and enjoying myself. And you know, it's something that now looking back when I suppose finished my rugby that I realised, God, that was so important to me at a young age, that there was never pressure. There was never pressurised to play a sport. It's just because I wanted to play it. And it's just, I suppose when you reflect back, you know, when you finish things, that's one thing that really stood out to me.
And it's only when you're, like you said, reflecting back now, you realise how to know every parent, like I'm the same myself, my parents used to encourage me, but they never forced me, and like, it's a great way to make friends, and it stood you, like, you know, growing up. What was your first memory of rugby then, say underage, before you made it kind of to the higher level?
Tell you now, my first memory, actually, it doesn't involve a team, it actually involves my sister. And we used to play out the back. We remember we had up the lawns, and we had two lawns out the front, they were the good lawns, and then we had the lawn out the back, and that's where we could, you know, play away and make a mess of it. And we actually played a game of rugby out the back regularly. And Fiona was always Johnny Sexton. Fiona was always Johnny Wilkinson, because she loved him. She knew everything about him, and I was always Ronan O'Gara because he was Irish, obviously. And obviously, not that I couldn't kick snow off a rope, like, but I still said I was Ronan O'Gara. And we used to literally go hell for leather over Macna Fields, tackling, running out, chipping chases, everything. And it's definitely stood to me. And then my first experience of underage was under 14s up Castle Island. We set up an under women's a girls team, which was fantastic. And
your dad was very involved at that time in the club, was he?
He was, yeah. Dad was really involved in the club, and I was pestering for years. I say a good 5 or 6, if not more, years to dad, like, can we get a girls team? Can we set up a girls team? And eventually I was like, look, we'll try. And I was like, right. When I heard that, like, there's a chance. And I got on to all the girls in my class. I was in Prez, Castle Island, and literally went around to everyone saying, will you play rugby? Will you come up to Castle Island? Will you play rugby? And got loads of girls signed up, you know, and we used to walk up after school, up to the rugby club, and do our training sessions after school. And that was one of my earliest memories of the underage team rugby, because I suppose it was the camaraderie. We all got behind it because we wanted to play it, and you know, we got the numbers ourselves and we worked to get it. And very lucky that we had some excellent coaches in Castle Island who gave us the time as well, like John and Breed, and they gave us the time, you know, that's at that age. And gave us our core skills that we still use. And it was just a fantastic, fantastic experience. And I remember Castle Island, there was the all-weather pitch. It was like the square. It was all like bits of hard rubber, bits of plastic. One thing that stands out is after a contact session, your boots and the car, like, would be destroyed in the bits of rubber. And you'd be trying your best not to dirty the car, like, but sure, no matter what, it was destroyed. So there's some of my earliest memories.
You're like a politician, so going around to the friends asking to come down. I heard on an interview, I don't know, was it on Off the Ball there, going back a few months ago, you looked up to Donnacha Walsh and Paul Galvin, was it, at a young age. What was it about them that you looked up to and admired?
Yeah, just in terms of football sense, like, you know, we always grew up watching the green and gold and watching football. And what struck me with Paul Galvin was just, he was such a physical player, you know, and even if the ball was lost, he'd keep fighting and he'd often get it back. Or if he didn't get it back, he would make it easy on the person who got the ball off him. Do you know what I mean? Or won the ball
the second time.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's just, I just love that attitude, that never giving up, constantly working for your team, constantly working for your teammates. And it just reached out to me. And like, he was a very skillful player as well. And then also with Donnacha Walsh, it was just, I thought he was always working. Do you know, I don't think if you ever saw a Kerry game, he was never stood still.
Yeah.
He was always running, and sometimes he didn't get the ball, but he was an option, or he was always tracking back players, and he never stopped going. And he often was the link play to so many great moves. But, you know, often people only remember the person who got the point or got the goal. But I always, it's from my own time of playing, I always look at the 3 or 4 phases beforehand, and yeah. I always see who started and who got that going. And it was often him. Do you know what I mean? So they were just two players. I just, when I was growing up, I always thought there were different people to aspire to be.
And like you said there, he'd done a lot of off the ball. I think a player now that's my own club mate that kind of represents the same as he does is Darren Moynihan. He's always running and always kind of recycling off the ball and all that. Moving on to rugby then, what position did you play? Were you flanker or what? Do you wanna describe to the people out there that aren't rugby heads what exactly your position was?
Yeah, so I was a flanker at the start of my playing days, and then I covered eight as well. So I played six, so it was a scrum, and you had the back of the scrum, and you had the three people at the back of the scrum pushing onto the front rows and the flanks, the front rows and the second rows, that's your back row. So I covered all those three positions, and I actually played in all three at different points for Ireland. And my favourite position though was six. I don't know, I think I'm an out and out six. I just love I suppose the hard work of it, and it's often unseen work you do, and you want to act in minutes at the breakdown, and you want to win the ball and all that, and it's a really physical position, and I love that. And I covered seven as well. Obviously seven, you know, you have to break off that scrum a lot quicker, and you're putting a lot of pressure on that nine, the ten, and the first and the start of the phase, and then you're really trying to make them second guess, I suppose, and then you're just off bring that inside support to your 10, the defensive line, and then you've your eight is your playmaker at the back of the scrum. So you know, my old favourite pick and go, or you know, you pick, you fend, or you pass to nine, or you just go straight to 10, or maybe 12 on a crash ball. So it's great, like there's three different positions, and the funny thing is all three positions have totally different roles off the same set plays.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've all these different plays, you're actually learning to play from three different positions every time. So you could imagine, like, you're like, oh God. But eventually you get used to it, you get used to running the plays. But like at the start of every season, you get your playbook, and I'm literally there. I had a hard back, and I'd be there writing out every possibility for six, every possibility for seven, every possibility for eight. And you're just there learning it all off and just making sure. No. When I say learning it off, you should know where you're meant to go. But like I always people, rugby's not you can't learn rugby. You can't learn rugby off a page. Like it's what happens in front of you, and you have to react. But I suppose, you know, for those starter plays, to knowing what to do and where you should be, so you don't get a roast that are given out there for being totally out of place.
It was the kind of the hard work zone stuff that you liked about it. Now, if you want to get in contact with me throughout the show with any questions or requests, you can contact me through my Instagram, enoconnell321, or through my email address, ioconnell@radiokerry.ie. We're going to go for a very quick break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back after this.
Stand Out with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
Now, you're very welcome back to Stand Out with me, Ian O'Connell. I'm here today with Ciara Griffin. If you're just joining us, the full interview will be up on the Radio Kerry website after the show, or you can now get this interview as well as all the shows I've done so far on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Stand Out with Ian O'Connell. Moving on then, were you called into the Munster squad in 2012, was it?
Yeah, I was, and that was my first time with seniors, because I played under 18s the year before. And then there was trials on in Nina, and I went just to try it and see. I was still eligible to play under 18s that year again, so I kind of said, look, I go to under 18 the senior trials just for experience, see what it's like, never expecting to make it. And then I made that squad, and I got my first senior Munster cap in against Ulster up in Queen's University. So it was class.
That was the start of it all. You were moving on then, 2015, you were calling to the Irish setup. I was reading that you did in your first training session, did you break your leg or did you get injured or something?
Yeah, snapped my leg in my first session in my first contact drill. So I laugh about it because I'm like, oh, for God's sake, of all things, like you probably, if you know the way I played, I love contact.
Yeah.
so much to the detriment of some of my coach at times, like, you know, like when you try running around people instead of true all the time. But the first drill, pure weird, got tackled, leg just bent in a weird way and it broke. But I myself convinced, I was like, oh, it's fine, it has to be fine. So I got the physio to strap it. And I was like, I ran a few links of the pitch with the leg strapped. And I was like, but it kept kind of, I'd get maybe 3 or 4 sets and it'd just give way. And I was like, oh, there's something not right here. And then sure, I got the scan and sure, it was a broken fibula, a clean straight break. Like you couldn't, there was no denying it.
How did you react to that mentally? Because I've talked to a lot of sports people, and like when they're on the sideline for so long, it's obviously, even myself now at the start when I used to go up watching the boys after my accident, you know, you'd be looking, you'd just be kind of play with your head, like, but I'm gone past that stage now. I'd be roaring and shouting at them on the sideline. But how did you react to that mentally, your first time in with the Irish setup, and this happened? Like, it was obviously a huge setback.
Yeah, it was rotten, to be honest. It was awful, and the way it, when it happened. But I'm very much the person that, you know, you turn a setback into a positive, that makes sense, that I'll never dwell in it. I won't be sitting down with the couch eating a tub and Jerry's just to make myself feel better. You know, I always see it as an opportunity to work on something else. Because I'll never forget it on the way home in the car. I was petrified telling mom and dad, like, I was like, oh, how do I break this? And then, like, so I remember ringing them and I was like, look, yeah, a good 3 or 4 minutes talking about the training session in camp. He's like, yeah, it went well. I was like, got a small injury. And they're like, oh, what happened? I was like, I broke my leg. And there was pure silence. I was like, but I only broke the fibula. I was like, of all the bones, it's the best bone I could have broken, because it's a non-weight bearing bone. So I was like, it was actually okay. So there was me straight away, like, flipping the switch, trying to see the positive side of it. But remember, I got a soft cast. Was that on Saturday? And then on the Monday, I was in the gym working my upper body, because I saw it as an opportunity to get stronger and bigger, you know, because you can't use the leg, but you can use your arms, you know, yourself. So I just worked away and did the gym work, worked on my upper body an awful lot. I was actually in the gym so much, it was ridiculous with a broken leg. And then I bought when I was on my hard cast, I bought a skateboard. So I'd go into the gym, I'd have my backpack and I'd have my skateboard in the backpack and I'd have a yoga ball and I'd be hitting the yoga ball around the place with my crutches so I could do the bench and weights, because I'd put my leg on the yoga ball so it wouldn't take any weight. So the cast was fine. So it was great for me, that was independence, like, and I'm a very independent person. And I like doing things myself at times. And then for the roar, I used to put my broken leg on the roar on the skateboard, and my good leg I'd strap it in really tight, and I could still, like, I'd still do a full rowing session just with one leg. but I was laughing. It got to the point where I'd obviously done it too much, in that the base of my cast was after fading away from the skateboard like a sandpaper. So, how do I explain this? Like, when I was going getting it changed, but they asked no questions. They say they knew what was going on, like, but so that's my mindset always. Like, I always think, you know, there's a way of coming out of it. And to be honest, I think that helped me recover quicker, because, like, I was back, I got out of the cast in 5 weeks, I ran 3 or 4 weeks of rehab, and I was back in camp in January, and I broke it in October.
Go away.
Yeah, so I only missed one game and a few training sessions, but I was back for the very start of January camp for that 2016 Six Nations. And
you made your debut against Wales in the Six Nations, was it?
Yeah, I did, up in Donnybrook.
What was that like?
That was unreal. I remember we were in camp the week before and we were being told, kind of, if you're going to be involved or you weren't going to be involved. And we were being told that, look, you're going to be in the match day squad, and look, I'm hopefully be making your debut off the bench. And I remember I was like, oh, I couldn't get over it. And then that day on the bus down, we always stay in the Talbot. We always stay in the Talbot Hotel. So it was just the same drive down to Donnybrook. And I remember I never really get nervous, but I was petrified. Like, I couldn't, I say I was getting pale, I'm just nervous. And I never listened to music or anything. I just like to focus on what's at hand. And I remember Heather. Yeah, I like silence. And I remember Heather O'Brien, she was the eight, the amazing Irish eight. She was playing eight on the day. And she just sat beside me and she's like, look, you'll be fine. You know, like, she, you know what you're doing. I was like, yeah, yeah. And then I just stepped it, you know. And it was great. I got to come on the second half. And, you know, I remember my first involvement is I won a turnover. And I remember I got that, and I remember getting up smiling. I was like, okay, yeah, I'm okay for this. And then that was it.
It made it all the more satisfying, like you said, after coming back from the injury. Your nickname when you were playing junior, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Where did that come from? I was kind of interested in that when I read it.
Yeah, so junior, like I... junior, Jew, whatever, like, that's my name, like, above, and when I was playing, I actually never really answered to Kira, to be honest. Like, you get a very slow reaction if you call me Kira, but it came from that year in 2012, I was the youngest on the Munster squad, so I got the name Junior, and the oldest player got the name Senior, so Junior and Senior kind of washed out for each other. And it just stuck, to be honest, like Junior stuck. And yeah, it's, you know, there could be a lot worse nicknames out of there. So I was happy with Junior. And it was handy as well for playing, you know what I mean? Because there's very rare you get two juniors on the pitch at one time. Yeah. So it was handy for things like that.
It's like my best friend Michael Horgan, his name is, with his second name Horgan. And with about 9 years now, his nickname is Hoggy. But his mom would be saying, like, I don't know why I even christened him Michael, because he never gets even called it. When the pandemic struck then in 2020, she's mad, I think it's almost 3 years ago, isn't it?
Oh, it's crazy.
That was obviously a huge moment in sports, and in not even just sports, for the whole world. And like, when sports is cancelled, when it was all you knew for so long, like playing, that must have been like a huge setback. What was that like, do you know, in regards to not being able to go training or nothing like that?
Yeah, that was tough. The first 2 weeks of the pandemic, you were like, geez, what's even happening? Do you know, like, I think we all were like in a daze or in a fog, like, what is going on? Like, is this real life? And you go from being, you know, doing three sessions a week and then up in camp, doing six sessions on a weekend, to not seeing anyone, to doing nothing. Like, but I was very lucky in that I had a gym in the house. I was very lucky that I hadn't put in at the time, and I was able to work away. So I actually ended up doing the most training I've ever done during lockdown, because I had the gym and I tipped away myself, and we found every forest trail within our 5k, because we were really in Cordell at the time of the pandemic, and we were just up an old road, and it was great. It was lovely and quiet, so very hilly. So there was plenty of hill running and things like that. And it kept us going, and it kept me busy and loads, like, did farming. Like, I chopped so much timber during that lockdown, my God. And you know what I mean? I think it's actually, the shed is still full above, like. So it was good. Definitely having my own gym and being able to do a bit of running and having the farm, it saved me during lockdown, and that, it kept me busy and kept me active, and it didn't feel as much of a, I suppose, as a shock to the system. But like, it was, but then I remember, forget the first camp we went back, my God, as I go, we're back with a bang here, like. And so yeah, no, in some ways the break was good for the body, you know. My body had never gotten that break before, apart from when I retired now, that, like, it had never gotten so many weeks without contact, without the heavy sessions, without the heavy weights. And it definitely helped me, definitely 100%. Like, little niggles that I had healed up, and it definitely helped me then when we went back.
We're going to go for a very quick ad break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be straight back after the...
Stand Out with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
Now, you're very welcome back to Stand Out with me, Ian O'Connell. I'm here today with Kira Griffin. Kira has a very interesting story, and if you're just joining us, you can get the interview straight after the show in the podcast section on the Radio Kerry website, or you can now get this show as well as all the shows I've done so far on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Stand Out with Ian O'Connell. In regards to like being in the team circle still during COVID and stuff, did you have like say online Zoom meetings? I was reading that your strength and conditioning, was it Orla Kern her name was? She kind of set out a program for you, wasn't it? Did you, were you still kind of in the same circle with the team, like touching base, say with the background staff and manager and all that?
Oh yeah, like we always stayed like weekly, always stayed weekly contact, and so the captain, I, you know, always make sure players are okay, so I was doing regular check-ins with people just to see how they're getting on and things like that, and you know, if they wanted to chat I was there, and if they didn't, that's fine too. And then our SNC did like a was class, like she made up this program for us. She gave options of say weights, if you'd weights you could do it, but if you didn't have weights you could also do it.
Yeah.
And she had different options, and that was class, cause, and then obviously there was different competitions and we had different Zoom challenges, and you had to video it and send it into the group, and there was a leaderboard, and so we're all so competitive, but of course Lindsay Peace would win nearly every challenge or every leaderboard because she's that competitive. But it was brilliant, and it was a great way of kind of, you know, kept morale going and boost the morale too, and it was a great way of checking in with each other too, which was excellent. And we did like a few live sessions as well, so did some live circuits, bit of mobility and stuff like that, just to change it up. Like, so even though it was virtually, it was nice to stay in contact.
And like you said there, being captain, you kind of had the responsibility to check in on people and stuff. What, because it was like, was it 24 years of age he appointed you as captain, like from such a young age, being 24, did you feel a certain amount of pressure, or what was it like? Because talking to you now, I think you're the kind of person that you kind of, when you were named captain, that you probably liked the challenge.
Yeah, you did. Like, to be honest, being named captain was something I never expected. I remember I was actually in school working when I got the call. I was on break, and I was like, "What?" Like, and then I was like, "Oh," like I was like, "Okay," and then I had to go into the staff room and pretend like nothing happened. Do you know what I mean? I was like, my whole head was spinning. but I wouldn't say it was pressure. It was just more like it was a learning curve. Do you know what I can? Like I said that to the girls the very first day, like when I was announced that. You won't get big speeches, things like that. It's just, you know, actions. That's what I look for, and what I lead by is actions. And it was my way, like, and the way I kind of led it was, I wasn't a massive voice all the time, but, you know, like, we'd have a leadership group, and there'd be different leaders then among the team, and that was a great way of kind of sharing responsibility too, and making sure it didn't all fall on my shoulders. Because often, you know, as captain, people think you should be in, like, you'll be correcting different behaviours or pushing your standards, and I'm like, right, like, that's like, you know, you're not in school, like I'm off the clock, that, you know, you don't have to be bad cop all the time. And so what was really good there is, you know, having that leadership group and to delegate and have different roles for different people. And I was very big on, say, younger players when they came into the squad, getting them involved as well, because I suppose when I was a captain at a young age, you know, it just showed, like, I think that experience would have helped if I had more experience in those leadership roles from a young age too. And so that was something I kind of started doing, was kind of, even if they weren't in a leadership group, you know, I'd chat with the younger players, ask for any feedback, things they saw or anything they'd like to change, or what thing would do well for the team or the group. And I found that really good, and I was very big on like communication and open communication in the group, and definitely that helped, because, you know, people felt like they could come to you, they could talk to you, if it, you know, and they could also slag you, which was good. It was good for team morale. So, oh yeah, I think you'd often get slagged up there. But that's good too. You know, I think it was a good way of showing we did a really good group friendship and a kind of a good relationship as a team. So yeah, that was kind of my philosophy.
Like you were saying there at the start of the interview about the women's team starting in the club when you were going around to your friends and stuff, it's amazing to see over the last 2 or 3 years the progress in women's sports, like not even in rugby and soccer, but like even GAA there, you've seen the ladies finals and across the pond in Sunday, the Euros final, there was nearly 80,000 or something at it. Since you started your sporting career over all sports to now, what difference have you seen, like, since then?
Oh, it's a massive. When I first started, now it's a total polar opposite, which is fantastic, because it means there's more opportunities for young girls to get involved in sports, in so many different types of sports, like you were saying there. And I think a big thing is there's definitely more coverage. You know, yeah. Where you can definitely see even the paper, there's more sport, or online, there's more sport being advertised. Like, I was at the game on Sunday, the Kerry Ladies, and it was just fantastic. Now, unfortunately, look, the results didn't go the way we hoped. But, like, if you just think about what they have achieved in a season, do you know, like, and I thought there was such good, I suppose, that was highlighted so well as well, and there's really good support around the county firm. And that's just one team, one example. And I think that's getting more and more regular, yeah. Which is what we need. And you can see, though, what's great is that female teams, they're performing, you know, because they're getting a bit of backing, they're getting the time, they're getting the support. And I think that's what's really important. And you can see teams are flourishing. Like, there was like, what was it, 46,000 was at the game on Sunday.
Yeah.
It was a really good game of football. And there's some really good skill on display, and it was just brilliant. I won't, like, going into the game, I just couldn't remark enough the amount of younger girls going supporting, and they're in their kit and they're full gear on, and they're going supporting their heroes, like in both the Meath colours and the Kerry colours. And it was just fantastic, because I just think it's, once they see it more, it becomes more regular, it becomes a norm, and they don't bat an eyelid now. And that's what I'd love to see more of, and that's a big difference I can see from when I first started, you know, from having to get a team set up,
yeah.
To now the option of so many teams in the county to go play with. And I hope now it just goes from strength to strength and keeps getting stronger.
And it's great to see the, like you said, the coverage even on the papers and stuff, and there's kind of more funding from the government and stuff, like, coming in, and it's great to see. And it's not becoming known as ladies football and men's football, it's becoming known as football all round, and that's what you want to see from where you're from back there now, where you're playing Castle Island and stuff. A lot, it's like a GAA stronghold, but a lot of rugby players have come out of there, haven't there?
Yeah, there's maybe something in the water around here, I'd say, in that seems to be a good few rugby players coming from around in the different parishes, even like you've Corrow has plenty, Ballymac, there's one at Castle Island, so it is brilliant to see, and Scarps as well have players. So I don't know, I think it's hopefully if we could battle it, we'd be away with it, wouldn't we, just to get more players. But I think it's mad, like in Ballymac, like I'd Helen Brosnan, she's my neighbour over the road, and I used to go up, she played for Ireland, and like I used to go up to her when I was small, that geez, I want to be like my neighbour, you know. And like she played there, and she was an out half for Ireland, was top class. And then, like, you know, you've local heroes then, like your Sean Fleming, Coral, your Sharon Lynch, Siobhan Barrett, you know. So it is, there is a lot of female players, and there's also obviously the male players as well, like some McGalway and McDowell, all that, and JJ, and your Sean McCarthy as well, who did really well in rugby. So yeah, I hope now that there'll be more in years to come, there'll be more names from this area and from Kerry, even just to see more Kerry players coming through, because it is difficult, you know, with a lot of it being centralised in Dublin, like you've a lot of travel when you're from Kerry, and just like the Kerry players who are travelling down for their football, you know, it takes a toll on the body. So I think hopefully finally it might change that and make it more centralising, that they might go to different provinces, but I'd love to see definitely more players getting involved.
Now we're going to go for our last step break. Stay tuned in, because there's lots more to come in the last part of the show. We'll be straight back after these.
Stand Out with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
Now you're very welcome back to the last part of the show. I'm here today with Ciara Griffin. Moving on now towards the end of your career in, you know, 2020, 2021 and stuff. What was, like, after such a successful career, it was obviously probably a hard enough decision to to come to retire and stuff. Was it kind of playing on your mind for a while, or was this there was family reason, or was there any, was it a big decision to make?
Yeah, it was a massive decision because, like, rugby was my life for so many years, and then, like, you know, I organised my life around rugby, and I'm very lucky that my husband, who was my boyfriend at the time, was so patient and just so understanding and so supportive that, you know, he knew that, like, it was all for a reason. I had it in goal. And to be honest now, I'll tell you what happened. Obviously, we Parma, and it didn't go our way. We didn't qualify for the World Cup, and which was absolutely heartbreaking. It was there like mourning. But then, you know, you realise, okay, there's life outside the sport as well. And then what happened was, just I sat back, looked at different things, and it was going to be the start of a new four-year cycle for the next World Cup qualifiers. And I knew myself, just my own plans and stuff, that I wasn't going to be around for the next World Cup for a four-year cycle. And I kind of just thinking that I'm very big on, with the jersey, you don't own it. You never own a jersey. You're a gatekeeper. That's the way I always start. You don't own a jersey, you keep it, you gatekeep it, and you mind it for the next generation and for that next player who's pushing you to play at your best, who's at your heels, you know? And I kind of just looking back, and I was like, I'm not going to be around for another 4 years. So rather than, you know, taking opportunities that a younger player could get that exposure at a young age, like at a young, maybe there's 18, 19, 20-year-olds there, that'd be 4 years of experience for those group of players, or whoever, those number of players in that position. Not saying I would have been selected every time, but if I kept going, you know, if I was competitive and kept trying, I'd hope I'd get that position. Whereas I'd be keeping it knowing I would be trying for going to a World Cup if we got there. So it was my way of realising that, look, I achieved as much as I could achieve in the time I had, and it was time, I suppose, for me to focus on my next adventure and my next challenge. And then, you know, it's what I know about sport is often you don't go out on your own terms.
Yeah.
And I got to go out on my own terms, which is very rare. Like, I got to go out in front of a home crowd against Japan, and then a week later I played with the Barbarians up in Twickenham, was vice captain. Like, if you told me that, to a 14-year-old Kira who was going around asking all her friends to play rugby to get a team, like, she would have laughed at you and said, you're what you're after taking, you're high. Whereas, you know, it's just when you look at it that way, look, it was a really hard decision, and it's not something I did lightly at all. Like, it took weeks and months of deliberation and chats and loads of toing and froing with family and friends and just chatting. And but no, I must say I'm delighted, really content, and really happy with my decision. It was just the right time for me, and that was really important, that, like I said, it was my terms, and I got to go up my own terms playing the style of rugby I love playing, and playing with my group of friends and just enjoying it. I think that's really important. And then I'm back playing the round ball from the oval ball, attempting to learn the rules again.
I was going to say that, actually, like, when you finished up, like you said, it's a great way to describe you're only a gatekeeper for the next person. You went back playing football then straight away, like you said, and the first person you were marking was an old teammate, wasn't it?
Yeah, this season the first person, one of the first people to mark was Louise Galvin. So I was laughing, I was like, this is typical, she's still as fast as ever. But it's good, like, I'm enjoying being back playing the game, and we're doing, myself and Damien, we're doing a bit of running, and we're doing a few half marathons as well. So, you know, it's a nice little challenge, and keeps the mind and the body ticking over, because, like, we're laughing, like, we're nearly doing more training now than I'm retired than we did together when I was playing, which is nice too, because, like I was saying earlier, I'm not one to sit still. So I definitely think being active and being busy has helped the transition much easier for me from playing at the elite level. But yeah, I'm loving every minute of my retirement, Dean, to be honest. So hopefully long may it continue.
And like I said, it's a great way to spend time now with your husband and do the marathons and stuff. Before we finish up, I just want to touch on life now. You're teaching at the moment. What's that like? What subjects are you are you teaching on, and were you the kind of person growing up that you wanted to go into teaching?
I'm teaching in the CBS primary school in Tralee, so they're in Clonalour. So I have second class this year again, so I've had second class the last 2 years, and I love teaching. I'm not being cliche, but I've always wanted to be a teacher, you know, from a young age. It was always what I wanted to do. My mom was a teacher as well for years, and I always, you know, was like, I wanted to be a farmer like dad, a teacher like mom. I get to do the two in one, which is great. But I love teaching. It's a really good, I just find it really, no one day is the same. That's the one way of putting it. And it's good, there's really good challenges. And I love to teach PE, as you can imagine. So there's always some random PE classes brought out by me, so it's just good. And I'm really enjoying it. And I'm just really lucky now that, you know, I get to go back teaching as well. And I was balancing teaching full time and playing with Ireland as well. So it was a lot of balancing and a lot of time for both. But look forward now to being asked a full time focus on it now again.
What was it like during COVID as a teacher? Were you on the Zoom and stuff? Because I know when I was on Zoom in school and stuff, the teacher, I'd say we nearly broke her heart. The camera would be on and off, and there'd be bags of potatoes being thrown back and everything.
I think all of us that time we were just learning on the go, because we were never envisioned anything like that happening. But we used Teams, and we were using Teams and getting kids on it, and which was great. And I used to have phone calls. I'd ring them, make sure they're checking in, see how they were doing. But I definitely prefer the face-to-face teaching, that's for sure. I'm definitely made out of classroom and not the computer. I'm joining back to a bit of normality.
Very good. Last question before you go, for any say younger people coming up now through the ranks like you are over the last couple of years, what advice would you give them that, like you said, if there was a 14-year-old, Kira would think that you were going out in Twickenham and wearing the Irish jersey and stuff. If they're in that position now, what would you say to them?
My one piece I'd say is back yourself. Don't be the self-doubter, because you're there for a reason. You know, you're playing for, you're in a team for a reason, and just back yourself and back what you can do. And there'll be times where things don't go your way. It's very easy to let the head sink and go down, but you're good enough, you're strong enough, and you're there for a reason. So just back what you can do and enjoy it. Because I think once you back yourself and you enjoy yourself, everything else just flows and it sits into place for you. So there are my two nuggets of advice for any player coming through.
Very good. Kira, thanks a million for coming on. I really appreciate your time and really enjoyed that chat. And hopefully there'll be more people coming out of the waters in Cass Island and stuff wearing the green and gold and the green of Ireland.
That's great. Thanks a million. Love you, chatting.
Now, unfortunately, that's all we have time for tonight. I hope you all enjoyed the show as much as I have, and I appreciate you tuning in as always. A massive thanks to Kira for coming on and sharing her story with me today. If you have any questions, suggestions, or requests for next week's show, you can contact me through my Instagram, enoconnell321, or through my email address, ioconnell@radiokerry.ie. Stay tuned in to Radio Kerry, because Brian Priestley is up next with That's Jazz. I'll be back at the same time next week from 8 to 9 p.m. Until then, stay safe and mind yourself.